Mrs. Yarra, thou mercy.
Ave Satana!
Hail
Satan! Hail Satan!
Greetings, heathens. Welcome to Hail Satan. We are a podcast discussing Satanism, culture, and life in general through the eyes of modern Satanists. I'm your host, Joseph Rose. I'm a member of the Satanic Temple and founder of a little group called Satanic Delco.
Hi, I'm Francesca Gentili. I am a member of Satanic Delco, and I'm just here to join today.
Francesca Gentili.
Yes.
That's a serious sounding name. I usually refer to Francesca as either Frank, Frankie, Frank-a-Lank, Frankenstein, Frankenbutts, Franks. What else? Anything else?
That sounds about right.
That's yeah. A pretty exhaustive list of your nicknames. What do you prefer? What does everybody call you?
For the majority, Frank or Frankie.
Frank or Frankie. Yeah.
Except my mom. She calls me Doodlebug.
Doodlebug. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Does she call you Franklin? Was that a Franklin?
Franklin, yeah. Yeah. My mom calls me everything.
Yeah.
I have a lot of family nicknames.
I've probably told you this before, but I've always had this sort of imaginary, I don't know, not a crush, but I have this attraction to women that have sort of traditionally male names. Like if a woman is named Frankie, Danny, Joey, Johnny, Billy, Bobby, you know, any of those things, there's just something cute about it.
Yeah.
You know, like I always wish I had a good, like a close girl pal growing up, like a Danny or Bobby or Johnny or something, you know, I don't know.
Well, now you have a Frankie.
Now I've got a Frankie. Well, welcome Frankie. Maybe so today on the show, everybody, before we get lost here, we're going to get a little more in depth and talk about the seven fundamental tenets of the Satanic Temple. We breezed over the idea of them on our first episode because I knew we'd be doing one that, you know, gave them sort of their own attention. And I guess that's what we're going to do today. You ready for this, Frank?
I think so.
Before we get into all of that stuff, do you want to take a couple of moments to sort of more thoroughly introduce yourself or maybe give us a clue as to how you found yourself in a bunch of Satanists to begin with?
Yeah, so I've been a part of Satanic Delco since March of 2020. I became a member of the Satanic Temple through a contest I did through the group probably a couple months after that. I actually don't know my exact date on that. But how I even became a group member, I kind of stumbled upon it. So before I got involved with Satanic Delco, I had been going through like kind of a spiritual void. I grew up Catholic my entire life, but I was always a skeptic. So there wasn't necessarily like an experience. There was more of like a cultivating bunch of experiences my whole life. So I was just always questioning like, why do I believe this shit? Yeah. Like literally always that kid in class, always told like, put your hand down. We've had enough. But in 2015, after I graduated high school, I was with a group of friends and we were just like hanging out, bullshitting. And, you know, the topic of God got brought up and I was very, you know, stern in believing that, yes, God exists. Until someone mentioned like, no, religion's just something to look forward to. And when you die, you die. And for some reason that stuck with me and I was like, wow, like, damn, like I never considered outside of what I believe. So that led me to just kind of keep questioning like more in depth about like afterlife and all that stuff. So I became a member of Satanic Delco through another member. She just sent me like a request and I was like, oh, like I thought it was some band or something. I had no idea what Satanism was.
So prior to that, you had nothing?
No.
Okay.
I had no knowledge prior to, like, the group.
Gotcha.
So I accepted this Facebook request from a friend, and then I ended up in the garage and have been a member ever since. And
that's usually how it goes, right?
Yeah.
You end up in a garage, and then you're in for life.
Yeah, and that's then once I was, you know, on the group for a couple of weeks, I became more active in the group and, like, tried to really, like, seek out connections and, like, make myself known. I just recently been more open with my family about it, which is not terrible. Definitely the responses I prepared for. But
you more recently, like, explicitly sort of came out to them, or?
So my family knows I'm in the group, and okay. They always refer to it as the Satan group or, like, the devil worshiping. Yeah. So they don't hate me about, like, it's not a surprise I would end up in something like this, right. Honestly.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm definitely more open with my family. I just don't talk too much about it because I'm not going to talk to people that aren't going to listen.
Sure.
But yeah, my family's been pretty whatever about it. Like, I mean, I actually talked about, like, the To Hell with Homelessness event. And, you know, like, even my mom, who's very, like, to her beliefs, considers, like, you know, like, maybe it's not as bad as it seems. Like,
yeah.
I see my daughter doing it, and she seems to be doing pretty well. So I think she'll come around.
Yeah. Yeah. So you haven't really run into too much static with the family?
No, not really. As for my friends, none of them have said anything negatively about it. Like I said, it's really not surprising I would end up in, like, a sure. Satan group, but everyone's knowledge about it seems to be pretty, like, obviously I don't worship Satan.
Right.
Like, just from knowing me personally, they know I'm not going to be involved with something that would, like, harm people or myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Gotcha.
So I would say I've been pretty supported in my so-called journey. So yeah, it's
cool.
Been pretty cool. Yeah. It's been a smooth ride.
Not so bad. Yeah. When we, on the last episode, we spoke with Mara, and she explained her sort of journey to Satanism, like, growing up as a younger girl and everything. And she also seemed to have a pretty fairly easy ride of it. Her family was pretty supportive in her quest for knowledge and different things. And yours doesn't seem so bad either. Were you, how sort of in to Catholicism were you?
So, I attended Catholic institutions from the time I was in kindergarten to first semester of college. So yeah. I've been in a Catholic institute schooling wise for 13 years. Into it. I did do, like, some altar serving in college. I did some ministry, but, we didn't go to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, my mom wasn't, like, religiously attending, like, events and stuff.
Yeah.
We also experienced a lot of loss in our family. Like, my sister passed, my father passed. So, like, after my sister passed is when we really stopped going to church and stuff. Mm. We still, like, involved ourselves in the community, but it was also, like, hard, like, with our family going through so much because we were always, like, that family in the school. Like, you know, like, we were always kind of negatively looked at as, like, the Gentile family. And then I ended up going to Prendi because of everything with my sister at Inabarro. So that's why I didn't go to, like, the public school. But all that stuff, we weren't generally, like, very into it. But, I mean, my mom definitely, like, we prayed at dinner time, you know, things like that. Like, so we, like, made of what we had about it.
It was always there.
Yeah, it was always there.
Yeah, gotcha.
It was kind of like, this is what we believe, but, like, not, like, practice heavily.
Sure.
Yeah.
Understood. Well, welcome to the dark side. I guess you've been over here for a little while.
Yeah.
We're going to keep you if we can. So today we are going to talk about the seven tenets, like we said. Before we get to that, we have a whole bunch of stuff I want to cover because it is only our second episode, but we've been getting some feedback, which is really great. And so maybe I should read some mail. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Seems reasonable. I got some messages. We got a couple from Facebook. Put a post out there just asking people similarly, you know, how did you find yourself in Satanism? What led you to this? What's your journey been like? Why are you here? All of that. We got a guy on Facebook named Michael Teeples. He says, for me, Satanism was originally about rebellion and spitting in Christianity's face. But the more I learned about it, the less it became about being selfish and stubborn, and it became more about finding who I am and finding peace with my past demons. So that's kind of intense,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I like that a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and I can kind of relate to that too. When I first discovered Satanism as a kid, that was probably a little part of it. You know, I was definitely angry. I was whatever, you know, mm-hmm. that kid. And I found that Satanic Bible in the bookstore, and I was like, I don't know what this is right now, but it is right up my alley. We got one also from Facebook from William D. We'll just say William D. I was in a Christian cult, which did make the local news. I didn't buy into it and had a tougher time because of it. They tried to beat it into me literally, and I found Satanism, which helped me from continuing to keep making suicide attempts and be strong. Stuff like Antichrist Superstar, Portrait of an American Family, Broken, and The Downward Spiral helped a lot too. I still do an occasional ritual, and I feel better about myself afterwards. Satanism saved my life. That's what William says. Those things he was listing there, a Portrait of an American Family, Broken, you have no idea what he's talking about, do you?
Not a clue.
Not a clue. This Frankie, she's a little younger than some of us. She doesn't know what that stuff means. Frankie, those are albums from the bands Marilyn Manson and Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
And that's what he's into.
With, you know, the names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Artists.
I definitely appreciated all those albums very much as well. We got a quick little message from Brandy, who I think is one of our patrons. Yeah, Brandy, one of our patrons. She says, the first podcast episode is awesome. I'm looking forward to more. Thank you for sharing your insights on Satanism. Thanks, Brandy.
Yeah,
thanks
nice for supportive message.
Yeah, that was nice. Thanks for supporting the show and everything. And last one, we got a nice message from Darcel. She says, I just wanted to give you kudos on a very well done conversation with a Christian. Oh, Darcel is referring to a little bonus episode that I put up on our Patreon channel early today. It's about a 60-minute conversation, mostly focused on the seven tenets with a current, active, non-denominational Christian acquaintance of mine. We chatted for quite a while, and much longer than I thought we were going to, and that's what Darcel is referring to. She says, I'm not sure you could have picked a better person to speak with. He did an awesome job staying respectful while still seeking to understand and challenging the rationale behind the seven tenets. There were a couple of times where I found myself chiming in on the conversation, especially while discussing tenet number 5 and science, as if the two of you could hear me. I would absolutely love to hear more of these kind of conversations. Thank you, Darcel.
I believe Darcel is also in the Satanic Mom group I'm in.
Yes.
Yes,
there is. I think Darcel.
So after you posted in like Satanic Delco, we kind of just made a group.
Little
like
mom group.
Little mom group, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're all going to finally meet each other Saturday.
That's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's great. All right, so before we get too far, we're going to not forget to mention our website. We do have a website. I'd love for you to go there. It is HailSatanPodcast.com. On our website, you'll find links to all of our social media platforms. We're pretty new, but they are active, so come join us over there. And you'll also find a link to our Patreon channel. I won't get all into it right now, but we have a few tiers, and we're trying to offer up some enticing things for everyone, so give it a look. And speaking of Patreon, we do have patrons that I should mention. These are our first, is it 10? Do we have 10? Maybe. A bunch of new patrons, and they are Brandy. Thank you, Brandy. She is a single name patron, and I love those. Joseph Daniel. Thank you, sir. Christina. Another single name mystery woman. Darcel, the aforementioned Darcel. She's supporting the show. Christina Griffin. Miranda Dunn. Valerie Johnson. Mara LaCates, our own Mara, supporting the show. Joe Lombardo, and of course, the powerful Hassie Way on the Patreon.
Going back, Miranda Dunn's a very good friend of mine.
I did not
know she was a patron. She is.
Look at
childhood
that.
Friend. Went to Prendi with her.
No shit.
We survived that together.
Another former Catholic school.
Yes, she is. I knew she was in the group. She's not very active in the group, but
okay.
Yes, we're very, our families grew up together.
Oh, great. Well, look at that. Guys, thank you sincerely so much for supporting the show, especially this early on. It really is a nice motivator to know you guys are listening and supportive and everything. Shall we, Frank?
Shall we?
The seven tenets?
We shall.
just in case there's anyone catching this episode right now who isn't already familiar, we're talking about the Satanic Temple, all right? That's the organization of which Frankie and I are both members, and many of our pals at Satanic Delco are also members of that group. And that's kind of the group whose ideology represents us the best, I would say. And at the very core of the belief system of the Satanic Temple are the seven fundamental tenets. And we're going to get into them one by one. I guess some of them might be easily taken at face value, and we won't go too far, but maybe some of them will have a little bit more to say.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah. And so we'll just dig into them. Let's see. Tenet number one. One should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. What do we think, Frank?
I think it's a pretty solid tenet. I definitely follow that one throughout my daily life.
This one is a real generalized way of, you know, you should be nice. You should be compassionate when you're dealing with people. And it says toward all creatures, you know, people and animals and everybody out there. And why not? Why not? Compassion and empathy.
We're all stuck on this rock together.
Yeah.
We should make the most of it.
That's one that, you know, hard to argue with that one. You should have compassion, and I'm down with it.
Definitely.
Number two, the struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions.
I definitely love this tenet because it should prevail over laws and institutions. Anytime there is an injustice, and especially within the law system that is failing forever, we should definitely, as people, stick up for what is justice and like what we need in our communities, our nation, world. I definitely like that one because we should definitely always have a voice, no matter what the law says, no matter what Congress says, our effing president says. Like,
yeah,
our voices matter a lot and people don't speak up enough.
Yeah. I always would always, I'm not even sure where this phrase comes from, but I always fall back to this idea of the spirit of the law. I mean, I know this isn't all about the law, but that concept of, you know, fighting for the spirit of the law, sometimes the spirit or the motivation behind a law sometimes gets a little lost.
Yeah,
in the black and white of it, you know.
Well, because you have something written, you can interpret it different ways. Everybody's going to interpret differently.
Yeah.
So, like you said, the spirit of the law, what does it actually mean? And every circumstance is different. So one law, it's hard to apply to millions of people, you know?
Yeah, and billions, you know, yeah. We're multiplying at an outrageous rate as humans. But yeah, the struggle for justice seems like a worthwhile cause. And of course, you know, we bump into cases where the law and the spirit of justice don't meet up. You know, the civil rights movement, you know, mm-hmm. is about as clear of an example as you might want to give.
Yeah.
You know, as people, you know, how easy and obvious is it to say we should all be equal? Of course. You know, we should all have the same rights. We're all people just living here together. And for some reason, you know, sometimes laws and institutions fall behind.
Definitely. I mean, even with civil rights movement, that's been, you know, so long, but like we still fight for those same people.
Yeah. And sadly, it still is a struggle sometimes.
Yeah. It's just sometimes, you know, but the more important thing is that the fight is continuing and you always have to fight for justice and what's right for people and, you know, who is living at the moment.
Yeah.
We need to really support each other no matter what.
Tenet number three, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone.
This is my motherfucking tenet.
I was going to say, this yes. is Frankie's, this is your jam here.
This is my fucking jam here.
Why this one?
So this is actually what I wrote my essay on for their certificate. Yep. Yes, definitely. I have always been big on like my body, my right. You know, going to Catholic school, told abortion's wrong, told you can't paint your nails, you can't dye your hair, you can't do all the craziest shit. And I'm like, it's my body.
Yeah.
I want to present it how I want to present it. And, you know, we were just talking about on the couch about, you know, boundaries, setting boundaries for yourself, allowing.
That sounds crazy what you just said right now, Frank.
What?
You just said we were on the couch discussing boundaries and what
no,
was okay.
Not like that. But seriously, like, you know, your body is your body. And if you don't set your boundaries of what you want or do not want to do with it, anybody's going to cross them.
Yeah.
Or you might even not know you have a boundary and get into a situation and then create one. So you just, I love this tenet because you are your person. Like, your body is your physical self, and you need to do everything you can to keep it healthy, keep it strong, keep it, you know, keep it yours.
Yeah. I was going to say, keep it yours. Like, yeah, that's the important part, you know, whatever that is, whatever that means to the individual, that's where the limits get set. That's where the boundaries are set. That's where the everything should be determined. Nothing, what's, you know, it's your body. Nothing is more a part of you than that. You know, that's how we sort of identify each other and relate to one another. And
yeah, it's our physical representation to the world. And if we don't keep that appearance how we want it, then it just fucks with your head, you know?
Yeah. For you, the obvious stuff, you know, with this one, you know, we always, it seems like often enough with this tenet, we talk about things like sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Abortion is maybe a pretty obvious one with this one. What else sort of comes to mind with this one? Do you have anything else that you sort of connect it to?
So definitely, like I said, growing up Catholic and being told, like, especially being a woman, you have to look a certain way. Like, you should have long hair. You shouldn't dye your hair. You shouldn't have black fingernails. You shouldn't wear makeup. Like, boys won't like you if you wear too much makeup. Well, I don't even like boys. But seriously, like, you're told these things, especially like growing up Catholic and especially a woman, I'm told these things on how to look and how to present myself, but they didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Like, it just made me more uncomfortable in my own skin. Like, that's not how I wanted to look or act. So, you know, to me, like, yes, the more serious ones like abortion and, you know, things like sexual harassment, they weigh heavy. But, like, even simply just, like, telling someone, like, oh, why is your hair like that? Like, it affects people, you know?
Yeah.
Or just even on the positive side, just simply saying, hey, you look really nice today. Like, that could really, like, change someone's outlook of themselves and how they, like, put their own value on.
Sure. That was tenet number three. Number four is the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own.
So the fourth tenet, there's so much to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's saying, like, you have the freedom to offend, but at the same time, you don't want to encroach upon others. So,
right,
it gets so sticky. Like, it's kind of like a slippery slope almost.
This is one that I'm, you know, when I'm faced with a lot of new members, what I mean is, you know, people that request membership in our Satanic Delco group. And a lot of those people are brand spanking new to the idea of Satanism altogether.
Mm-hmm.
They're just being introduced to the concept. They're just being introduced to the Satanic Temple, the Seven Tenets, all of this. And so I often get questions, and this tenet might be the most common one that I get asked about, and they always want to know about that part that says the freedom to offend.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, that really sticks out to people, because I guess the idea is that when someone is offended, there might be a sort of built-in assumption that offense happened on purpose. Like, if you were offended, that means somebody went out of their way to do something to offend you or to be offensive. Right. And that's not the case. In real life, that just isn't really the case.
Right.
Especially now, you know, in the culture that we're so familiar with over these last few years, we know that people can be wildly offended about just about any fucking thing out there.
Right.
And again, this is one, you know, I'm sorry to anybody that's heard me talk about these topics a million times. I say the same thing so many times, but a real simple example that I always use to everyone for this one is that I point out that, you know, even the cover of our podcast and so much of the aesthetics that we associate with Satanism are blasphemous imagery. You know, I use an inverted cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be offensive to some people. Now, I'm not designing a thing with an inverted cross with the mindset of, oh, I can't wait to upset some or offend some people. I know that it's going to happen just because we know as adults that these people are out there.
Right.
But as this tenet points out, including the freedom to offend, we have that freedom. And I think when you combine that freedom along with something like the first tenet that tells us to be compassionate, I think you can strike a very reasonable balance. I don't feel bad for 1 minute for using an inverted cross.
As you shouldn't, because being, you know, talking about the tenets and, you know, the Satanic Temple, you know, it's a religion, it's considered, you know. So with this one, going to religion, you know, certain religions wear like headdresses or like full body dresses, right?
Yeah.
That can offend people.
Sure.
I know people in my own family who will, you know, they say pretty sideways shit about it, but is that wrong of that person to express themselves religiously, especially? Like, so it's like this person is offensive to other people, but they're just expressing themselves. So especially when it does come to religion, you know, like you're saying, we're using, you know, the upside down cross and like, you know, other satanic symbolism, but that's our freedom to do so. And yes, it will offend people, but it's kind of their interpretation of it. Yeah. Their lack of understanding is what causes them to be offended by it.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was speaking to my Christian friend Jace on that bonus episode that I mentioned, we stopped on this one for a bit and talked it over. And, you know, there's this, like, where is the responsibility? You know, I guess if you've set out, if you're on a mission to offend and you're being intentionally offensive to someone or to a group, that's its own thing, I guess. But when that's not the case, when a person is offended by something, just they're offended by its very existence. Mm-hmm. The onus of that feeling is kind of on that person. It's on the receiver of the offended feeling.
Exactly. It's their interpretation that's causing some sort of insecurity about whatever it is. So you, like the person who is offending someone, whether it's intentional or not, they can't be responsible for how somebody is interpreting something and feeling about something. Like we're responsible for our feelings and our emotions and how we react.
Yeah.
So as long as I'm doing it, if a person is expressing themselves in like a respectful manner and just simply, this is what I believe, this is what I wear, this is how I talk, whatever it is, if someone is offended by that, kind of your problem.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, an inverted cross should be no more offensive to, you know, a Christian person who could be offended by that than a Christian's cross or a crucifix or any of their imagery could be offensive to us. Because look, we're not talking about an image. We're not talking about a cross. Nobody cares about the cross or the inverted cross or any of these images. What makes them important or mean anything or be offensive is the ideology that they represent.
Right.
We don't give a fuck about the cross. It's just a cross. It doesn't mean anything. What can be offensive is, oh, we know what you mean. Mm-hmm. We know what you mean when you wear that cross, or we know what you mean when you invert that cross. And if there are people or groups that have opposing views, those views in their very existence can be offensive, you know?
Definitely.
But we wouldn't expect Christians to all of a sudden repair their ideology to suit us any more than we're going to repair ours to suit them.
Right.
And so,
and I definitely think with being offended, a lot of people who get offended or things that offend people, I think does come from a basic of lacking understanding of what the thing is.
Yeah.
So like, I really like believe that, because like the more I talk about Satanism and the more I talk about what I do in the group, the more my family accepts me, and they don't really jive with it.
Yeah.
But I really just think that like, when you are offended, you just maybe don't understand enough about this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And where I run into, where I run into this, like we've mentioned, just sort of the climate of outrage and offense in our culture right now is maybe at an all-time high, I think. Yeah. It's things are pretty touchy out here.
Very sensitive.
And I really admire and enjoy a handful of, especially, you know, comedians stand out.
Yeah.
They're on the forefront. You know, these are guys that, you know, men and women, of course, that their job, to a point, is to say outrageous things.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not they believe those things is irrelevant. You know, let's assume they don't, because I know for sure comedians are saying outrageous things that they don't mean. You know, I say outrageous things that I don't mean all the time.
It's for a reaction.
Yeah, you're just, they're doing a thing. If that's your...
A thing that you paid to say, so...
Yeah, or not. If you're sitting there, have you ever sat in the room with your friends and just said some outrageous shit, you know?
That's me, like, with friends saying outrageous shit.
Yeah, yeah. And you do those things. And, you know, sometimes they can be offensive, especially if you're on a larger stage, if you have an audience, you know, if you're a Dave Chappelle.
Right.
You're gonna offend some people. Your options are be boring as fuck or offend some people. Those are the only options, because if you break out at all of playing it super safe and PC all the time, you're gonna offend some people.
Right.
But, you know, I guess the level of reaction to that offended feeling is, I guess, what matters.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, you know, saying something to offend someone is a lot different than, like, genuinely trying to harm them or, you know, taking it a step further and hating them. Like, that's beyond offensive. That's beyond what, like, I think this means.
Yeah, and so, everyone is going to have their own personal, you know, ever-fluctuating threshold of what will offend them
on any
given topic. Like, I can, you know, I don't know, I can joke about drugs and crazy shit with a bunch of my friends. But if I said those same things to my friend who maybe lost a family member recently to drugs, well, it might strike them differently and they might feel some kind of way about it. You know, they might be offended and be like, why would you talk about that? And I get that.
No, I get it. But, like, at the same time, like I've been saying, like, when you're offended, if it's because of an emotional attachment or an insecurity you have, you have to be mindful, like, that's why you're offended. And you have to be mindful that a person may or may not intentionally said that thing to offend you. Yeah. And if they did do it intentionally, you don't have to blow up at them. Like, you can just be like, all right, well, you're a dick and move on.
Yeah,
but then on the other side, when they unintentionally do it, if you don't make somebody aware of that or like, hey, you need to be a little more mindful of other people and how they feel, how do you expect anybody to really change?
Yeah.
You know, I just think with being offended, you need to, like, why am I offended? Okay, this is the reason I'm offended. And then, like, react, like, accordingly. Like, try not to let, like, your anger or sadness or whatever it is splurge out before you can, like, reason with yourself why you're offended.
Yeah. So are we missing anything on that one? Let's see. The second half of it is to willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. To me, that feels like, is that sort of a golden rule kind of vibe? You know, like, treat others the way you would expect to be treated. If you don't want to give freedom to others, don't expect to have those freedoms.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Even better than that, like, treat others how you want to be treated, but also, like, I think just being mindful, like, don't be a dick. Like, don't be a dick.
We fall back to that a lot here.
Like, just do not be a dick and, like, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And if you are a dick, admit you're a dick and move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, definitely try to, like, be like, oh, my bad, I was a dick. I didn't even realize I was a dick. And then...
Well, we're going to definitely get to that one as well. All right, we'll move ahead. Number 5, beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs.
Yes, definitely so relevant in society today. Like, our own president is literally distorting science and trying to say science is wrong. And it's so detrimental. Like, literally, that's why we have such a division right now of people, like, especially with, like, the mask, the virus, all that shit. Like, it's insanity. And this tenet really goes to prove that, like, you cannot be arrogant to be above science. You really can't. Yeah. It's literal evidence of what is going on in our physical world.
I mean, it's 2020 and we have people that say the earth is flat. So
we do. Like, and this is
and like, you know, for all the internet is such a great thing, right? We love this internet. I love the internet. I'm old enough to know and remember clearly life before the internet. And it was way shittier. Like, the internet's awesome. I fucking love downloading albums. I love reading great articles. I love finding out about anything I want to know and watching YouTube videos about it. But it gives rise to things like flat earthers. It's so crazy.
Like, speaking of the internet, it is great. It's a fantastic tool. I'm all for it. I've had it my whole life.
Of course.
I've had it my whole life, you know? Yep. I've grew up with computers, then iPhones, MacBooks, you name it. But, so, one of my family members sent me this meme, and this was in the beginning of coronavirus when, before the stimulus even came out. And it was like a check saying, oh, I got my stimulus of someone's bank account. But the charge or whatever it was from Pornhub. And I was like, I literally had to explain to this family member. I was like, listen, this is fake. And she was like, well, what do you mean it's fake? Like, it's their bank statement. I was like, yes, it is a fake bank statement. Look at the charge or whatever it was in statement. And they were like, oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah. And I have had many conversations of articles and things like trying to explain that everything you see is not true.
Yeah.
So it's like, as great as it is, you have things like that that are like, I'm 23. I understand. Like, I can find humor in that. But then you have other people who take these things so seriously. And I'm like, what's not clicking? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. And then, and you know, again, to reference the chat I had with my friend Jace, who was a Christian, my perception was that, you know, if a Christian person were to be faced with the seven tenets and read through them, you know, I would get the feeling that most of them seem reasonable to any person. There are some sticking points, of course, but I always assumed that this would be the big deal breaker because it specifically is like a science first sort of approach, should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world and take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs. And man, I guess, at least for me, you know, with maybe a somewhat rudimentary understanding of all that Christianity has to offer, I feel like this one is the one that's like, that's not real because
science is fake, science, God is real.
Like, yeah, I don't think you can have science and Christianity both existing on their own terms together. I feel like you can't.
Yeah, without discrediting the entire Bible, doesn't it say humans are like a couple thousand years old or something anyway? So yeah, it's like,
well, yeah, it says a lot of things.
Right, it does say a lot of things, one of many.
I mean, we could get into, you know, there's a million different ways you could interpret the Bible itself. If we are,
a man rose himself from the dead, you know, just some crazy shit was going down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I definitely agree. That's a deal breaker for people. But also, like, this causes, like, people putting their beliefs above science causes such an arrogance and such like a willful, like, ignorance.
Yeah.
And like, it hurts people. It really puts people in danger. And like, you know, you take people's human rights away because you don't believe in abortion, or you don't believe women should have this right. You don't believe trans people should have rights to their body, like even beyond bodily things. You take it so far that like you, by your belief, regardless of what science says, regardless of the current societal quota, whatever, you go beyond to say like, oh, all of that is wrong. I'm right.
Yeah.
Like that blows my mind to see, like, for people to be so indulgent in themselves to believe that like even science is beneath them.
Yeah. Even, you know, early on while I was wrestling with the idea of God or Christianity or any of that as a young person, I would ask, you know, all the questions. You know, I asked every question like we want to do. You know, why?
Natural,
I want to know. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Where?
It's my daughter's favorite word.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. And you know what answer never worked for me? God works in mysterious ways. You know,
after every significant death I've had, I've fucking can't even tell you how many times I've had people say,
yeah,
God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
He does not.
And look, I get it. I like to work in mysterious ways sometimes, but man, this is too important. You know, yes. I want answers. I need answers.
Like, God works in mysterious ways, but then you have science literally saying no.
Yeah.
Literally saying this is one of the fucking ways.
Like, you know what my favorite answer that any scientist ever gives, and it's the one that gives me the most faith in science generally, mm-hmm. is I don't know, or we don't know yet. Like, I love that answer.
It's the most honest answer. Yeah,
that's the best fucking answer. Also, because sometimes shit is crazy and wild, and we don't know the exact behavior of this exploding fucking star the bajillion miles away past this black hole. Like, I don't fucking know. And they don't know yet, but we're working it out. People are working on it. I don't know. We're trying.
I think I've learned to respect science over belief because science admits it's wrong.
Yeah.
And science admits it's changing.
Yeah,
there
science
is
changes.
Never anything exact because we live in an atmosphere, in a world that is constantly changing around us.
Yeah.
Like, we're constantly changing. Our cells are dying, our cells are growing. Like, there are so many different things happening rapidly.
Yeah.
Like, even right now, coronavirus, like, they can honestly say, like, okay, this is what we know now, and like, that's why everything's changing and adapting. And I just really respect that. You know, you have a bunch of humans coming together, working on things, experimenting, and trying to figure out what can help everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most, like, respect you can have is for science, because it admits it's wrong, it admits it changes, and there's nothing definitive about it because there's nothing definitive except, like, death.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I keep referencing it, but it was interesting to me during my chat with Jace. We stopped and chatted about this one for a good little while, and he was a little more, he leaned into this one pretty skeptically, which I appreciate. Actually, it's harder for me sometimes because I'm close to this. I sort of jive with these seven tenets when I read them. You know, people generally have a tendency to, you know, we have biases. We know there's certain things we want to like a little bit. And sometimes you give them a little leeway. Mm-hmm. And so it was refreshing to me to have a chat with someone completely on the outside who was very skeptical about these and brought parts of them up that maybe I would not have focused on or wouldn't have thought of right away in the context of these tenets. And in this one, he did mention just the idea that we know people have biases. We know people are fallible. Of course, we're going to get to that. And in the midst of all that imperfection that mankind has, some of it gets twisted into corruption and things like that. And when we deal with science, you know, in modern society, science is tied up with a lot of things. It's tied up with politics.
Yeah.
It's tied up with money. It's tied up with all kinds of things that go beyond, you know, a group or a community of scientists just putting their heads down and, you know, banging away at a problem.
Right.
Trying to solve it or figure something out. So it isn't perfect because people aren't perfect.
And it's easy to manipulate science to benefit your own belief because it's always changing.
Yeah.
And it does suck because it is tied up with, like, politics, money, you know, a lot of, like, influential things.
The human condition.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, when people take science and distort it for their own whatever they're trying to do, it's just like, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could solve the human problem, everything would be great.
If we could solve that humans are wrong and you can accept that you're wrong, then we could all move forward.
Yeah, we're doing our best, I like to think.
Generally I like to think.
Yeah. Number 6, people are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that might have been caused.
I think everyone appreciates the sixth tenet.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Who can't relate to this one, right?
Yeah, I think almost anybody in our group or, you know, I've always heard the sixth tenet is like what hits home for them. They're like, oh, yeah, this is the one for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody should have that one in common. I don't know anybody that isn't fallible, that hasn't made a mistake. And if you've done those things, then you can benefit from the idea that you should do your best to rectify it. Do your best.
But on the flip side, I definitely think it's great to admit you're wrong, imperfect, whatever. But I don't think that should stop anybody from improving themselves. Because some people
think,
oh, well, no one's perfect anyway, whatever. Or they'll take it in a more manipulative way and say, oh, well, you know, this person did something so good. And they'll be like, oh, well, they could have done this, that, whatever. Mm. So don't be a dick about it.
Yeah. Or I guess you could just say, maybe you don't feel sorry about doing something and you just kind of use it as an excuse. And I'm fallible.
Right. But I do also think that, you know, if you do something wrong and you want to rectify and you feel that that's the right thing to do in the situation, definitely do it. I don't think it should be expected of anyone, because I've been through things with people and may or may not have been wrong that I didn't see yet, that it took me a while to come to that conclusion. But if someone's not ready to admit their fault, you shouldn't be forced on anyone. And it shouldn't really be held against them. Sometimes it takes time for someone to really reevaluate and reflect upon themselves to make that significant change.
Yeah. And this is one that this has come to me much more later in life as I've gotten a bit older, this idea of realizing just how wrong I am sometimes. You know, you can catch yourself, you know, once you get to a place in life and you know yourself a little better, or you become a little more self-aware or just conscious of your behavior and the feelings that you're putting out there. And I'm much more able to give a genuine apology or admission to someone now than I would have been 10, certainly 15 years ago.
You're able to see it now. You're able to see the wrongdoing and the way you acted and why it mattered that you acted that way.
Yeah. And I'm also genuinely sorry. You know,
it comes from a better spot, not just like a, oh, well, you know, I did something shitty, I should probably apologize.
Yeah.
It comes from, you know, like an actual place of forgiveness and wanting to forgive yourself for doing wrong, but also wanting someone to accept forgiveness for the harm you caused. And I think that is way better than just kind of trying to chalk it up and move past it.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we've exhausted that one pretty good. You got anything else for that? That one's pretty simple, right?
No, it is simple, but I definitely think it's important just to like make it known that like if you don't feel sorry, don't say it.
Right.
Like don't just chalk this one up. Like it's a simple one, but don't chalk it up.
Yeah, it should be
significant.
It should be sincere.
One. Definitely.
Yeah. Moving on to our final tenet, number 7. Every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word.
Hail Satan.
This one always just feels like a nice final summary of the tenets to me. You know, it kind of wraps them up. It almost rehashes a little bit of what has been mentioned before in a couple of spots. The spirit of compassion.
Wisdom, justice.
Yeah, and prevail over the written or spoken word.
Yeah, I definitely like that it's a guiding principle. Take these at, you know, what they mean to you and kind of as like a, I guess, some sort of moral code.
Definitely.
I guess so. So,
yeah, I guess that's what these tenets are, right? These are the moral code. This is what separates Satanists and, in our case, members of the Satanic Temple from just saying you're an atheist.
Right. So I think even Maura mentioned it on your previous episode, an atheist with a moral code.
Yes.
Is so to say. I think that's like a perfect way to describe the tenets and how they're followed.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Is there anything new in this one? Let me look over it one more time. Every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. So inspire nobility in action and thought. I guess that's just, you know, it kind of plants a seed of nobility, kindness, compassion, all of those ideas. They're just sort of reminders of this is a noble way to carry yourself.
So I like the word noble because it reminds me of being, you know, honorable and respectful and just having good, like, personal traits about yourself to do good for yourself, but also for others. Like, when I think of noble, I think of someone who is coming from somewhere genuine and doing good.
Yeah. And I think if you're a regular, you know, a generally good person, if you're a good sort of mindful person out there trying to do your best, you mostly agree with all of this stuff anyway. But having them, having seven things that are written down that you can read over and over when you want to or refer to when you need to, it's important. I think it's really helpful. We all know it's easy to say, hey, be nice. Be nice to people.
Don't
okay.
be a dick.
Yeah, you know, that's easy enough. But, you know, sometimes it helps to have something a little more specific that's just a reminder. Like, how many times have you ever been in a situation or a conversation or whatever where one of these tenets maybe pops up in your mind? And you think, oh, yeah, like, tenant number three says this, you know?
Actually, for work, after I filled out my application, there was like a little, oh, what are your seven values? So I discreetly incorporated the seven tenets.
No shit.
Definitely paraphrase and like made them not as, how do I put this?
Satanic.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So I kind of discreetly put a little bit of this in each one because it's becoming a part of who I am, how I see myself and how I see my world. And I definitely think these values and these tenets are good to reflect upon. And like you said, you see something going on or you're in conversation and you do think of them. You think of what they mean to you and what they mean in your life. And I really like them in general. Like how they're worded. I like how they make me feel when I read them. I like talking about them and definitely like to reflect on them and really like put them into action.
Well, that pretty much covers the seven tenets, I guess.
Yep.
That's it?
Yep.
What have we learned here, Frank?
Don't be a dick.
The takeaway from this is, guys, I guess don't be a dick. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to talk to you again really soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. I'm going to ship it in at the... He will flee, sir.